Okay, before we jumped into this episode, I wanted to give a little bit of backstory and an update in advance. So this interview that I did with Haywood Gould revolved around his novel Cocktail, which he adapted for the big screen. We get into other things as well, you know, basically what led up to him writing the novel and life after the novel. So the main thing I wanted to point out here is we get to sort of what he's been up to now in the interview, and things have changed since we spoke. So I'm going to detail all that up front now. Since we've spoken, Haywood has written a memoir about the 60s, and it's due to come out June 21st. It's called Drafted, and I will include a link in the show notes where you can learn more about the book and pre-order it. This was a great discussion I had with Haywood, and if you haven't read Cocktail, I recommend it, and please enjoy the interview. Hello and welcome back to Big Screen Book Club, and I am beyond thrilled to welcome to the show screenwriter, journalist, novelist, and film director Haywood Gould. Haywood, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Craig. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's my pleasure. It's my pleasure. Now, we're here to talk about your novel Cocktail and the movie it inspired, but before that, I saw that you wrote what I guess would be called nonfiction prior to getting into fictional prose.
Yeah, definitely not fiction, yeah.
Yeah, and is that pretty much the time you were working as a bartender?
Yeah, I was working as a bartender, but also I was I wrote two novels while I was working as a bartender, too. And I wrote a bunch of, I guess you call them hack books, you know, which you could do in those days.
Yeah, and you wrote those under your name.
Oh, yeah. Well, one book I didn't write under my name. I wrote for a friend of mine who couldn't finish it. It was about the UCLA basketball team, the Fabulous Bruins. And that was a fun book, actually. I got to talk to John Wooden, all those guys.
All right. So then at what point did you make the transition to Hollywood? Because I see that you co-wrote Rolling Thunder with Paul Schrader, which is just a phenomenal film.
Yeah, I was – when did I make the – that's an interesting question, actually. I always wanted to write movies and direct movies, always. And I had written a movie in the 60s, a kind of a horror movie that was sold to a Dutch, you know, producer. I got like $2 for it. And, I kind of went with the flow. And the flow was to pick up all these, nonfiction book assignments and magazine assignments. But I was always working on fiction, always working on a novel. You know, I wanted to write the great American novel. So,
right.
Yeah. And then I just had those books published. And then while I was working as a bartender, I wrote a book about being a reporter, a novel. And then I wrote another one and I had them published. And, I'm trying to remember exactly how all this happened. And I wrote the screenplay for Fort Apache because that's where it really started. In 1972, when I was working as a bartender, I met these two cops in the Bronx, and I wrote a screenplay, for a producer named Marty Richards, called Fort Apache the Bronx. And although they didn't make the movie for years, it became a good writing sample for me. And it got out to the coast somehow. I don't know how. And they read it at Universal, and a producer named Roy Huggins hired me. And I was still working as a bartender. And flew me out to L.A. I had to get somebody to cover my shifts because I didn't want to quit the job. And it was a good bar job. They're hard to find. And so I really wrote a pilot for this guy, Roy Huggins, the producer. I did that in 1973. And I guess I just got known as a screenwriter, and the samples got around, and Bill Devane, read the Fort Apache screenplay. He also read two of the novels. And he told Larry Gordon, the producer, that that he wanted me to rewrite the script, you know, the Schrader script. So they flew me out. And again, I had to get somebody to cover my shifts. I didn't want to lose my bar job, even though I was working on a feature.
Yeah.
And that's how it started, I guess. I wrote for it, you know, so I kind of became known as a screenwriter and got other jobs.
All right. Excellent. So at what point did Cocktail sort of become an idea of something that you wanted to, you know, commit to paper as a novel?
I always wanted to write, friend, from day one, as I started working in a bar business, I wanted to write about the people I was meeting and it's just the whole atmosphere and the arena, as they say in the movie business. To me, it was fascinating. You know, I had never been a bar person. I was a coffee house person. I sat in a coffee house and drank coffee and, you know, smoked a lot of dope. And but I didn't go to bars. So when I became a bartender, this was all new to me. And I was quite interested in it. And most of the people I met, almost all the people I met, had not started out to work in restaurants, to be waiters, waitresses, bartenders, whatever, even cooks. They had kind of, you know, gravitated into this job as a way to make a living while they were really trying to get their real career going. And it was an interesting group of people. And it was an interesting environment. And the alcohol environment I found really kind of interesting and sad, you know, many times. Watching people go down the tubes, you know, become total booze junkies. So I wanted to write about all these people who I really loved. And it was kind of like an homage, you know, to them. And I started working on it in 83 or 84. And I got it published, I think, in 84.
All right. So the process of writing it was actually pretty quick then.
Took me about 6 or 8 months to write the book, which was in those days was long for me. I wrote even quicker. Now it takes me even longer to write than it used to, not shorter. The more I know, the less I know, and you know, the more I have to correct. So yeah. It took me 6 to 8 months, and I went to the same publisher that I used for the other two, actually for most of the nonfiction books as well, St. Martin's Press. They published it right away.
Yeah. Okay. So one of the unique things about Cocktail, Haywood, is as the author of the novel, you wrote the screenplay as well. When the book was optioned, did you sort of come with it, or how did it come to be that you wrote the screenplay as well?
Well, at that point, I was working for Universal and I was working on television shows for Universal. I was writing scripts and I was working on The Equalizer. I was a co-executive producer of The Equalizer. So my executive at Universal, Kerry McCluggage, had been promoted out of TV into features. Now, he read Cocktail. He's responsible for all this really in many ways. He read Cocktail and, he optioned it. And because I was a script writer, it was okay with them that I take a shot at the adaptation. So I did. So he hired me.
All right. So one of the things about the novel is it takes place over a pretty prolonged period of time. Was that something that you knew you had to change when you sat down to adapt it? Or how did you sort of compress it from a multi-year story to what I think in the movie is kind of a multi-month story?
Yeah, it is a multi-month story. It had to be that way. You know, if you show time going by, I mean, to me, it's hard to do that and make it work. And also with the many, many versions of this script, I don't know how many really, you know, I've been asked this question before and I always have a different number because I really don't know. Mm-hmm. No, there were a lot. And you'd have to say between 40 and 50 for both for Universal and for Disney. But there was never a question that it would have to be a love story that took place really quickly and moved, you know, in almost real time.
Okay. Now, as an author of the novel, did you sort of get a kick out of the idea that you were able to sort of tell this story in a different way?
Yeah, I did. And I also decided to write another movie or not to write the adaptation of the book. I wanted to write a movie about a bartender using some of the stuff in the book. So that was what I wanted to do. I don't know if that was anybody else agreed with that, but that was my secret plan. So I wanted to write a completely different movie. There were certain things about the book that I didn't think would be you know, we're kind of working a movie. I just wanted to write a new one.
Well, one of the interesting things is if you read the book and then go watch the movie, you'll see, you know, I guess if you compare it to music, you'll hear some of the same notes at certain points, which I thought is kind of neat.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I guess the attitude or the ambiance of the bar scene is, I hope, the same as it is in the book. The book's, of course, a lot more cynical about those things than the movie is. The movie was originally written before for a guy the same age as the Brian Flanagan, the protagonist in the book. So through the first, I don't know how many drafts, it was written for a guy in his late 30s who's kind of washed up, come to the end of his rope, and figures he has to marry a rich girl. So those drafts went on and on and on until they decided that they wanted to try to get Tom Cruise. Then that all changed. And when that changed, the whole sense of the movie changed as well.
I can imagine. So what's that like when you get sort of the phone call or the note from the studio saying that this is going to be a Tom Cruise film?
Well, it wasn't like that. It was, we're going to, you know, they never tell you. They keep you in suspense. And they dangle, you know, the possibility of a green-lit movie in front of you without ever telling you they're going to do it. And just to make you keep working, run around with your tongue hanging out, you know, like panting like a dog, you know, please. Mm-hmm. And so I never really, I mean, they had Cruise on a deal, I guess. I don't know. And so they mentioned him, and then all the rewrites changed, and I changed along with them. I wasn't going to argue about, you know, not wanting Tom Cruise in a movie. So, you know, yeah. Because I did. I did want him, actually. Yeah. But the whole kind of thrust, the thematic thrust of the movie totally changed. When his name was mentioned, he hadn't been signed. He hadn't committed, nothing. They just were just kind of dropping his name at that point.
Right. And was Brian Brown attached prior to Tom Cruise coming on board?
No, Brian was hired by Roger. Brian was a friend of Roger's. And he wanted, you know, he wanted Brian, which is lucky for us that he did. And Brian's great. A lot of names were dropped for that part. Burt Reynolds was approached at one point. Al Pacino even read the script and was approached. David Carradine, that was my choice. They said, well, who do you like? I said, David Carradine. They said, get out of here. We had a meeting. That was it. That was it for me. I wasn't invited back to the casting meeting after that. So they went to all these other guys, and essentially what happened was, I think I spoke to Reynolds about it. They said he wanted too much money. And you know, he's great, but I'm very, very glad that Brian got it instead. Very glad.
He's tremendous in that film, and
yeah,
you know, Brian Brown had an amazing run in the 80s of just, you know, great performance after great performance. And you know, they might be considered gimmick movies now, but I think his work in the two FX films
they're great.
Is solid.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, he had a good run. He was very Australian and wanted to go back home. I mean, he was a real Australian patriot in a way, you might say. And he wanted to go back home, and so he did, and he started a theater group or a theater company in Australia, which is very successful. And he did. I used to see him once in a while in Australian kind of film noirs, kind of movies. I would see him in those. But he mostly stayed in Australia after that. Mm-hmm. He's in a Ben Stiller movie, a pretty funny movie, actually. He plays an insurance guy.
Oh, I'll have to go back and look for that.
Yeah, yeah. It's Ben Stiller. Philip Seymour Hoffman's in that, too.
Oh, wow.
What the hell is the name of that movie? And Jennifer Aniston also. I can't think of any other movie now. It's a good movie. It's a funny movie.
I'll definitely look for it.
Yeah.
So as the movie's in production, did you see like a final cut of it before it opened in theaters or?
No, I was I was actually on strike. So we were on strike. The Writers Guild was on strike.
Okay.
So I never saw a final cut until it opened.
All right. So what was your?
I saw the final version.
Yeah. So what was your feelings as as the credits rolled at the end of that when you saw it in the theaters?
You know, I had been fighting all along during the whole production process to get stuff and fighting with Disney and, you know, and back and forth and one draft after another and on and on. So, you know, I felt there was stuff in it that I would have changed or I would have made differently. But I was sitting in a theater with a bunch of people who were going nuts, loving it. And, you know, I mean, that's the name of the game. So, you know, I mean, you don't write for yourself. I mean, you can if you want to.
Yeah.
But if you want to make a profession out of it, you write for other people. And if you're disappointed in what you did or if you think you could have done better, okay. But if they like it, fine. You know, that's what really counts. And,
yeah.
And I could see, I mean, the picture didn't get good reviews, but everybody I met who had seen it told me they loved it. So, you know, fine.
Excellent. And then after Cocktail, that's when you actually went on to direct as well, correct?
Yeah. I did One Good Cop, yeah.
Yeah, with Michael Keaton.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's it's very interesting that, you know, you wrote novels and screenplays and then also went on to direct. That's probably a career path a lot of people would aspire to.
Yeah, I mean, I just kind of got Disney to let me do it. I can't even explain. I mean, I said, can I do it? And they said, yeah, okay.
Wow.
They were very casual about it. And then, of course, they go make you nuts while you're making the movie. You know, Michael Eisner says, we greenlight your movie and then we dare you to make it. That was his famous line. And what that means is that you can make the movie now, but we're going to make our movie. Uh-huh. Make our movie, you know. But it was a tough experience. Not really. I mean, later on, I had tougher experiences making movies than this one. I didn't know. It was my first directing shot. So, I mean, I didn't know how tough a movie can get. This was not so. I had a really good crew and a great, you know, and great support from the studio. So, you know, I never worried about money. I just, you know, I had to, you know, ask for this and I got it, ask for that and I got it because they had really good production people.
Right, right. And you've since sort of found yourself back in the literary world, correct?
Well, yeah. You know, I came back to New York. You know, you have your moment, and if you're lucky, you get a shot. And then I was living out in L.A. I mean, my kids had all come back here, and they had announced their intentions of not to come ever coming back to L.A. again. So, you know, I mean, I still wanted to be in the movie business, but, you know, I wasn't getting that many jobs, and I also wanted to come home. So I came back to New York and started writing novels again, yeah. And that's what I've been doing.
All right, excellent. Is the latest one The Serial Killer's Daughter?
No, the latest one is Green Light for Murder.
Okay, excellent. And if people want to learn about your other books, is your personal website the best place to go?
Yeah. You can Google me and all that stuff. Yeah, you know.
No, I'll include a link to that in the show notes.
Okay, great.
But Heywood, I want to thank you for taking some time out to sort of go through the history of Cocktail with us. I really do think that it's if you were at all interested in what you saw on the screen, search the book out. It's available on Kindle. It's not hard to find, and it's a really good read. The fact that it takes place over multiple years, I think it really cements the friendship between Brian and Coughlin.
Right, it does. No, it's a different book. It's a different story in a way, you know. It's not a fairy tale.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the movie is, you know, a fairy tale. It's a, you know, and which is what it would, you know, which is what it had to be.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it, Heywood. Again, thank you very much for taking some time out, and we'll talk to you again soon, hopefully.
Okay, thanks, Greg.